Good morning. So David has been anointed as king in secret last week while Saul is very much still on the throne. Chapter 17, the next chapter from what we were doing last week, chapter 17 begins with terrifying news. We didn't read the whole chapter, it's pretty long. So I'm going to fill you in on some details. Chapter 17, verse 1. The Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socoh in Judah. So the Philistines were a powerful, seafaring people. They had an advanced military. They were kind of based by the coast of the Mediterranean, but they were looking for some new opportunities near the people of God. So King Saul and his army went to meet them. And each army is on a hill with the valley of Elah between them. So this is a logical entry point into Judah. This is a critical point for the people of God to protect, because if the Philistines are successful here, it's very bad news for all of Israel. The Philistines will have an easy time continuing to conquer. So here the two armies are on these hills with the valley between them. As if that's not bad enough, the Philistines have a formidable weapon in their champion warrior, Goliath. He was very tall, and the Bible details all his armor and weaponry, which was extensive, in addition to that shield bearer who gets to go out in front of him with the shields and protect him. And as if that's not bad enough, Goliath uses his words to insult and intimidate. He bullies Saul's army and he insults them and their God. So at this point, it would be natural to expect that King Saul would come out and face this opponent. Saul is a head taller than anyone else in Israel. Maybe not as tall as Goliath, probably, but he's the tallest around. And part of the reason that the people of God demanded a human king several chapters ago is because they wanted someone, as they said, someone to lead us and go out before us and fight our battles. That's the whole reason they wanted a king. But in chapter 17, it says, for 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Saul did not go out against him that 40 days, and nobody else did either. For 40 days, the bully taunted the people of God. It reminds me of the 40 days when the rain fell and Noah and his family were rescued in the ark and waiting. It reminds me of the 40 years when the people of God wandered in the wilderness, rescued from slavery in Egypt and yet not in the promised land yet, with danger all around. For 40 days, Jesus was tempted by Satan in the wilderness before beginning his public ministry. So 40 is a significant biblical number, and it's often a wilderness and a waiting time. There's often much to fear, and there certainly is in this case. With King Saul at the lead, the people of God are in a holding pattern. They're not destroyed, but they're not yet saved either. It would be natural to feel afraid. Then the narrative turns to David, son of Jesse. We learn that Jesse's three oldest sons are in Saul's army, and David is at home tending the sheep. David is sent on an errand to bring food to the soldiers and to bring back news to Jesse, who is naturally eager to know what is happening on the front lines. David ran all the way to the Israelite camp. And that's when he first heard the boasting of Goliath and saw the reaction of the Israelite army. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. They were talking about how Saul had offered rewards for one who could conquer Goliath, including financial reward for current and future generations of one's family. And yet no one would fight Goliath, not even King Saul. David then changes the narrative by bringing God into the conversation. He refers to Goliath as the one who defies the armies of the living God. The living God, not a hollow idol or a false hope, the living God. And this is the first mention we have of God so far. David says, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." So the man after God's own heart is trying to encourage and embolden the people to overcome their fear. I got to thinking about the Wizard of Oz with the scarecrow who needs a brain, and the Tin Man needs a heart, and the cowardly lion needs courage. I think in Hebrew language and thought, the cowardly lion would need a heart. Because in the scriptures, the heart is not primarily about how we feel or emotion. The heart is about commitment, about the will, about making a decision and the courage to follow it through. Courage. Verse 28, Eliab, the oldest brother, said, "I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is." Eliab, the oldest, says to David, the youngest, he takes David's courage for arrogance. But Saul overhears David's bold offer and invites David to come talk to him. Saul says, reasonably, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." The word behind young man there could mean baby to unmarried 20-something. In many of our Bible translations and children's Bibles, David is a boy, like a really young boy, but he wasn't necessarily that young. Young man, maybe. Teen to early 20s is probably our best guess. But he was smaller than Goliath, to be sure. He was less experienced in battle than Goliath, definitely. King Saul does not think he's ready. And who could argue? But David was undeterred. He rattled off his resume to Saul, naming his victories over a lion and a bear while guarding his family's sheep. And once again, David is the only person in this story to mention God. He names the living God. But then he gets more specific and uses the name for God only revealed to Israel. It's usually rendered "the Lord" in all caps in our English Bibles. David utters the sacred name. Yahweh is one way we say it sometimes. "The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the bear, and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." The Lord. David is smaller, he's younger, he's far, far less experienced, but it is the Lord who will enable him to fight the Philistine champion. The Lord is the source of David's courage. If it weren't for the Lord, Eliab would be right. David would be an arrogant fool to think he could conquer Goliath on his own. But the Spirit of the Lord is on David, and David knows. Saul then said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you. Go, and the Lord be with you." So now David's has Saul using the name Yahweh for the first time in this narrative. And David has Saul speaking of the Lord. Saul offers his armor to David, kind of some foreshadowing of David's rise to the throne in the future. But David refuses, saying he's not used to that. He's stepping out in radical faith. He's underprepared, lacking the traditional armor for protection, and he's minimally armed with those 5 stones. He approaches the well-armed giant man with just the 5 smooth stones, maybe baseball size, we don't know, and a sling, you know, slightly better than like a backyard slingshot toy, but still, not all the sword and spear and javelin that Goliath has. And Goliath mocked David and called down curses. Then David speaks to Goliath for the first time, and we get a sense of what David's motivation is for doing this and where his faith is. He says, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." David cannot stand by inactive while someone defies and disrespects his God. He cannot stand for his Lord to be mocked, and David enters the battle not for his personal glory, but to glorify the Lord and to show that God is awesome. He continues, "All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." The Philistines need to know about the goodness and power of the Lord, but so do the people of Israel. They need to see God's power at work. They need help alleviating their fears. They need to be reminded of God's power. They need their faith strengthened. And they need courage for the challenges ahead, because it's not like this will be the last challenge that the people of God face. We've summarized real quick. 47 verses, and then we get to the actual fight, which only lasts a few verses. The barely armed, inexperienced David against Goliath and his armor bearer, the champion with every weapon and shield at his disposal, every tool of the military of the time is at his disposal. As they move toward one another, David slung one of his stones, and amazingly, it lands in Goliath's forehead and sinks in, his first shot. And mighty Goliath fell face down, and then David finished him off. The Philistines immediately began to retreat, and the previously terrified and frozen in fear, immobilized Israelites shouted and pursued the Philistine army. A surprising and decisive victory. I think of Psalm 147. It said, "His pleasure is not in the strength of the horse, nor his delight in the legs of the warrior." Horse here is about military power. "The Lord delights in those who fear him, who put their hope in his unfailing love." Once again, in this story of David, we find that appearances don't matter. Goliath looked impossible to overcome, but the Lord was looking on the heart, and David's heart is after God's own heart. David fears God and puts his hope in God's unfailing love, and that, it turns out, is what really matters. I think of Paul in 2 Corinthians talking about his own struggle with a physical pain, and he says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me.'" And I ask us today, do we believe that God will be with us when we face the giants? Are we underprepared and minimally armed? Good, says Paul. Christ will be glorified when you step out in faith, weaknesses at all. The battle is the Lord's. We face spiritual battles as the enemy of God seeks to terrify and immobilize us and discourage us. and any number of challenges in life, home, work, all of it, health. The battle is the Lord's. Are we delighting? Are we respecting and fearing him? Are we putting our hope in God's unfailing love? Are we looking for God's power, Christ's power, to be made perfect in our weakness? So today we take heart. We face the opposition, whatever it is, not because we are strong, but because in our weakness, God is strong. Amen.